Nick Ashew, Team 980. Commanders, second preseason game tomorrow against the Lions. And we probably really won't know who's officially going to be in until right before the actual, you know, inactives are put out there. All of our football coverage is also brought to you by Xfinity here on the Team 980. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years. Guaranteed Xfinity. Imagine that. I'm actually surprised today that more people have, yesterday it was a lot more of play Jaden. Today it's a lot more of, yeah, I'm okay if he actually sits. I don't want him getting hurt. And this is what I'm saying. Like, honestly, this has gotten to the point where you can see, right? Preseason really is a debate in terms of what the value of it actually is. Because if you're not actually going to fully lean into using a preseason game to simulate a real regular season NFL game, then what's the point? That's really what it comes down to. We're not in the world very much anymore. I know you'll have certain moments where you'll see this, but we're not getting a lot of the Tom Brady throwing a touchdown pass to Randy Moss with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter of a preseason game. That just doesn't happen anymore in the NFL. And if the NFL is going to add another game, which they will, and we're at an 18-game regular schedule, what do you think teams are going to do looking at that marathon of a schedule that's ahead of them with the preseason? They're not playing anybody. And you're also going to have to really think about this, too, from a longevity perspective to a regular season. You're also going to have to think about making sure you keep your guys healthy for not 16 games, not 17 games, but 18 games now when it happens. And again, it's a when. We all know that that's going to be the case. But it is a physical game, and there will always be injuries. But most teams have the understanding that mitigating as much risk as you possibly can and trying to limit that is still a smart move, especially when it comes to a quarterback. Like, quarterbacks don't have to get hit. Running backs, linebackers, whoever, right? Most other positions, you're going to get popped. You're going to be physical. You're going to have to deal with getting the bumps and the bruises and get those calluses, right? You're going to have to deal with that. Okay. Quarterback's different. You want your quarterback untouched. I want Jaden Daniels' jersey to be perfectly clean when he's done with a game that's actually on a real grass field, right? I want that thing to look like he never hit the ground at all. There's no benefit to your quarterback taking hits at all. There are none. That's the difference with quarterback versus other positions. Like, I want to see Sonny Styles out there. The debate has never been, should Sonny Styles play in their second preseason game, right? Or should... Well, Adafe always hurt. That was going to be one of my examples. But, you know, like, name guy. Let's throw out Nick Cross. Yeah, Nick Cross needs to be out there because he's going to have to hit guys during the regular season. That's different. Your quarterback, you just want him untouched. You want them untouched. You want it like the hogs protecting him. You want sacked single digits the entire season. No touchies, all right? That's what you want from Jaden Daniels. It's just different. Quarterbacks are just a different situation. And I get it that there's a rhythm and there's all that, but you're working on so much of that in practice and in camp, and you're going to have to tweak it during the beginning of the regular season and onward anyway. Like, it's just different with where quarterbacks are. All right, let's go to Tom. What's up, Tom? You're on the team.
Hey, I'm glad you acknowledged that the game isn't the same as it used to be. I think it's great to hear here on August 21st, everybody that months ago was pontificating about how many wide receivers we need, what our wide receiver depth is, who the running back is, do we have a tight end, now understand that it's the five big guys up front that make the team go. And now you have the consideration of, now that you have significant injuries along the offensive line, now you fear putting your quarterback out there even to evaluate him because of the weakness up front. And then because of the weakness up front, you can't evaluate even your wide receivers there, but he was drooling all over. So I think although the game has changed, the biggest fundamental still exists, that it's a game played by big guys up front that make the machine roll. And it's kind of like a reset. Like, all of a sudden, doesn't matter those wide receivers. And I think what happens is, somebody asked me, like, what's the biggest thing you're looking for in Jaden Daniels this year? And my reply is to be coachable. And the retort I got back was, oh, Jaden Daniels is all in. He's coachable this. Well, if he's so coachable, then every time, like you said, he has to know when to get down. He has to know when to take 4 yards instead of trying to get 16 yards and learn how to slide and get down and let the rules work for himself. But I think that these injuries have really shown the importance of having an offensive line and having depth of your offensive line. And if you do that, you can honestly, I mean, you can NFL wide receivers are like NBA two guards. You can go down to your local playground and find a couple. But apparently in this new day and age, it's super critical that you have these wide receivers who are a buck 80, buck 85. And I've never seen more significance in the center position in all my life. My aunt was a waitress at the Dancing Crab in D.C. years ago, and every Friday, Len Haas, Sonny Jurgensen, and Ron McDowell would come in and rip down pitchers of beer, and there was never any significance of, holy hell, who the center is.
Tom, that is one of the best points that we have heard today. I appreciate it. Building your team from the inside out, and it really does matter. So I always talk about with the offense, and again, the defensive line also matters, but let's look at this from the offensive side of things. What do I always call it, right? The assembly line of success. I don't have a better name. It's just what I've gone with at this point. We're going to work with it. But if you don't have a great play caller as an offensive coordinator or head coach, whatever your situation is, you're already going to fail on offense. Then you have to have an offensive line. You got to have the big guys up front that are going to protect your quarterback or open up things up for the run. But in this case, we're talking throwing the football. There's a lot more throwing of the football in the NFL. It's just how it is. Offensive line has to protect the quarterback. Then you got to have a quarterback that can accurately get the ball to his wide receivers. Then you got to have receivers that have good hands that can actually make the plays and run good routes, all of those things. That's the only way that a pass game works is if all of these pieces work well together so you can move the ball up the field. And it's not going to be perfect every time, but you've got to have the level of consistency that's there. But wide receivers are flashy, quarterbacks are flashy, but if you don't have an offensive line, you still limit what your offense can be. Now, sure, there are quarterbacks that can overcome that to a point. I mean, look, we watched even with the fact that he's clearly not happy with the situation and it could be a lot better. Joe Burrow still had success, even with the injuries in Cincinnati with the bad offensive lines that he's had over the years. Jaden Daniels can move and he's mobile and can make plays with his legs so he can avoid certain situations if there's a breakdown in protection. Yeah, it's all there. But wouldn't you like to see Jaden Daniels run less and stand in the pocket tall and be protected with a nice clean pocket around him where he's throwing the football and Stephon Diggs is getting a 30-yard gain untouched? Now, it's not going to happen every time, but you'd like to see that sometimes, right? And that comes from up front. And again, it's why I'm concerned about Nick Allegretti missing time. Laramie Tunsil's out. We can't change that. Brandon Coleman's got to step up. He's been learning and working with Laramie Tunsil. He's got to step up at left tackle, and he's got to make all the right decisions, and he's got to protect his quarterback's blind side, period. Like, that situation's not going to change. The harder part is that Nick Allegretti is supposed to be your starting center and is missing time and has not gotten the reps that he should get because he continues to be hurt with that calf injury, and that's a problem. And it's those reps that really matter. It's that consistency that's there. Sure, he's played the position some before. Sure, he looked good enough that the team felt comfortable that they could go to him. But that doesn't mean that you've put yourself in an advantage because you've gotten this team, everybody out there, and you've got that consistency. And listen, no matter what, it takes time for everybody to get comfortable in an offense. The offense is going to look different week one, and then again week 10. It's just going to. And good offenses evolve. So you have to have that. But you also want to have your guys out there when you can make it work and have them healthy and getting the reps and the continuity and the chemistry, and all of that is just going to matter so much for an offense that's got, a rookie offensive coordinator. Like, that matters. And really, Jaden Daniels has one real year of NFL playing time. Last year barely counts, right? He was hurt, comes back, hurt again, back, hurt again. Didn't look like himself majority of the time that he was even out there on the field. We had, a couple of games, like the Chargers game, though there was moments, right? But let's be honest. Did Jaden really look like Jaden even when he was actually starting? He didn't. And he had, as the season went on, fewer and fewer weapons to throw the football to, all of those things. I mean, there was a lot there, and there was play calling. Again, there was a million factors there. But, this is pivotal for him in year three because he needs to continue to grow. And I'm not concerned about his football IQ or his work ethic or his dedication to becoming a great quarterback. It's none of that. But it's just being put in a position to succeed and just getting those reps. And, there's work is great, right? Hard work is great. Watching film is great. But you got to actually be able to get out on the field and execute that and do it consistently so it's second nature. So then David Blau can say, okay, cool, we're installing some new plays here, week 8. So you're not Cliff Kingsbury, where it's the same damn thing for the entire season. And instead, there's new things. So by the time you see the Bengals week 11, their defense is going, what the hell is this? I've never seen this before. This wasn't on film. That's where you really want this offense to evolve, but it takes steps to be able to get to that point. Mark is in Greenbelt. What's up, Mark? You're on the team.
Hi, how you doing today?
I'm good, good.
Hi, yes, I've been listening to, you know, conversation. I mean, as far as the preseason goes, I mean, I don't think abolishing the preseason, I think that would not be a good idea, because now, granted, you can have your controlled scrimmages, you practice in training camp, but that's not, you're not actually wrapping up and hitting and tackling. Without the preseason, I mean, I think that would be good at all. But as far as Jaden playing in this game, I'm okay either way. I'd like to see him play a couple series, but at the same time, I do understand the concerns with the center position. Personally, if I was going to play him in this game, I would put Matt Golden in there. I would not put Julian Good Jones in there. I watched some of the tape from the Miami game. I was very impressed what I saw. Matt Golden Catron Allen's, or what was it, Thomas's 20-yard touchdown run. He made a great seal block on that. He was the one that made that seal block that sprung him to allow him to get outside. But so I guess we'll wait and see. As far as do I think Jaden will play, I'm kind of thinking he won't, but it sounds like now from what J.P. Finley's saying and stuff, he thinks he might play. But either way, I'll be happy either way. I think this will be a good year for the team. I know it is concerning with the mounting injuries. That's concerning, but it doesn't look like, from what it appears, that all these other injuries are basically minor injuries. They're just, you know, erring on the side of caution with Odafe and Chase on. But I don't know. So that's kind of where I look at things. That's where I stand. But
yeah, I'll tell you this. Thanks, Mark. The Matt Golden, I think, may actually be their future at center. There's going to be more development there. I think it's going to take time, but I would not be surprised if a year or two we're talking about him being the starting center for this team. Julian Good Jones, that's not it. Julian Good Jones is not good. There's definitely something there. I don't know how I can figure out. Anthony, work with me on this. Julian Good Jones is not good. He's Julian Bad Jones. I don't know. I can't figure it out. There's some sort of dad joke in there or something I could make. I don't know what it is. I'm not good at dad jokes. I'm not a dad. So there you go. But I think Matt Colvin's probably going to be the long-term solution at center for them. And again, that was smart, though, for them to draft somebody in the sixth round that you say, hey, we see potential. Let's just give him the opportunity to grow, and he's not going to be out there necessarily right away. But it would be, I mean, he's going to get some reps there. He's going to get some reps at center against Detroit, hopefully. And that's going to help him in that process. But, yeah, the preseason's awkward now, man. Like, let's be honest with ourselves. It is an awkward thing because it's just not taken seriously like it used to be. And that really comes down to the debate of, like, how much risk are you willing to take for certain positions? Yeah, and there's positions where you gotta get hit. You got to take that, get those bumps and bruises and the calluses on your body to start the season off. But that's for linebackers. It's not for quarterbacks. So, you know, there's most likely, I think we see some of Jaden Daniels out there, but I'm not going to complain at all if he's not out there. All right, we'll go to one more here real quick. Toothpick. What's up, Toothpick?
Hey, what's good? Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Listen, fans are fickle, right? And what do I mean? They want it like Burger King. They want to have it their way, and you can't, right? You want a baseball pitcher to pitch 5 to 6 innings and turn it over to the bullpen, but when he's pitching a no-no, you want him to go 9 innings, right? You want a perfect football team. There's no such thing as a perfect football team. Let's look at your offensive line. If you got a 5-man unit and an offensive line, not all 5 are going to be all pro or pro bowlers. right? Sometimes you have to have an offensive line with 3 out of 5 are good, right? And maybe you got one Pro Bowler in there. You expect a quarterback to play football, to not participate in the preseason, and then from game number one to come out on fire, he's going to be sped up. He's going to be moving faster than everybody else on the football field, and that's not good because he's not seeing things the correct way. And guess what? The preseason is important, just like these joint practices, because this is where you find out if you have depth on your team, and this is also where you find out what guys can do. So when it comes to week one, week two, three, four, all the way down the line, you know how to scheme to hide your deficiencies. You can't do that if no one plays, right? And these bumps and bruises that we have this year, as far as injuries are concerned, it's getting ready for the season. We had a soft club mid type training camp last year, and we see what that turned out to be. You have to get ready for football by playing football. If they didn't like contact, they would play a different sport. They're football players, everyone, even the kicker. They got to play. Thanks for letting me vent, Nick.
Hey, I always love when Toothpick calls because he's always just bring it, right? Look, we don't have to agree or whatever. I just want to hear people that care about it, right? And it's funny. B-Mitch and I have talked about this a lot over the years, and a lot of former players have a similar mindset to him. Is like, you know, if you start softening up too much of the, whether it's the preseason or it's the, you know, specific way you handle training camp and things like that, yeah, like guys aren't prepared for the regular season when the hits are real. So there is that balance you have to find, but I think we get to a point where, you know, in the end, like Toothpick was saying, you know, I think it's, you got to take these hits, and these guys still have to figure it out. But that's why I say it's different from quarterback to linebacker. You're going to have to be a little bit more protective over your franchise quarterback versus guys that go out and their job is to lay hits versus your job as Jaden Daniels is to avoid hits. And I think those are the differences here. And that's why it's about Jaden Daniels and his usage in the preseason versus anybody else that's on this roster. Nick Ashew, Team 980. The toughest part about this time of year is really the numbers game and just making a roster and trying to navigate that numbers game, right? Nick Ashew, Team 980. We always have the preseason heroes, the August heroes, whatever you want to call them. We've only had one preseason game, but we've certainly had a couple of guys that fall into that category, and Robert Henry Jr. is right at the top. Like, Catron Allen's in the mix, but he also was drafted by the team. To me, it's more of the guys that either have bounced around the league that get more of an opportunity that have developed, and they show up in preseason, you're like, whoa, he got better, or it's an undrafted rookie free agent like a Robert Henry Jr. that goes off the way that he did in their first preseason game. And I know they're not against starters, and you know we have to put it in perspective, sort of like NBA Summer League, where you can get excited watching a guy, but then also temper your expectations because it's very different than a regular season NBA game. But you do have guys that have an opportunity against Detroit tomorrow to really continue that. And Robert Henry Jr. is obviously at the top of the list because, you know, like we talked to J.P. Finley earlier, and it might be a numbers game for him. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt on the roster, right? Rashad White on the roster. I'd argue Catron Allen on the roster. You draft him, he looks good in the first preseason game, as long as that's also continuing in camp. He fits a need for this team with the type of running back that he is. But then the question after that really becomes, like, what do you do? Is it going to be 3 running backs? What about Jeremy McNichols, who, you know, is dealing with an injury right now, but is he somebody that you still want to be a part of this roster? Or is he somebody that you think maybe doesn't hold as much value as a Robert Henry Jr.? But you got to hope that Robert Henry Jr. is a guy that, if he makes the active roster, is somebody that can actually contribute versus you put him on the practice squad, you keep 3 backs to start with, and then you start tinkering with the roster whenever injuries become, you know, what they are. Like, that's where this starts to get really tough, and we've only had one preseason game. And a lot of it's really decided more in camp, too. I mean, you get moments in preseason, but majority of this roster is already figured out. But Robert Henry Jr., to me, is at least because you're going to be the center of attention there playing that preseason game. Everybody can see it. It's an opportunity for him to make more of a name for himself. And worst-case scenario, he gets something on film where other people can see it. Like, worst case scenario for him, he doesn't make the roster and someone else picks him up when he's cut. There's a chance that that's the case, too. But I'd probably put Robert Henry Jr. right at the very, very top of this list. Anthony, you got anybody else that can make a name for themselves? tomorrow against Detroit that you like or you think needs to prove something?
I feel like Quan Martin.
Okay.
I think he could be a good candidate.
I feel like that's a name that's constantly being thrown around as somebody that needs to.
Yeah. I mean, I just think he's been floating with the twos and threes, and a lot of the times with the threes. So I feel as though coming off what he did last weekend, getting an interception, I think he probably has a lot to prove because, again, this is year four for him, and he's got to, you know, build off or at least improve upon what he did last year where he struggled to tackle, was sort of kind of out of position. And he just needs to, you know, make a case for himself because he's getting buried and buried deeper into that depth chart. So I would say Quan Martin, to be honest. And I'm not sure if, you know, them putting Jeremy Reeves ahead of him or, you know, Percy Butler was to ignite a fire within him or anything. But he went from being our starter to now being the third string or a part of the third string safety unit. So I would probably say him.
He's probably right at the top, and that's a name that we've been, you know, you hear quite a bit of. More to, you know, need to see more. It's going to be tough with the, if Jaden doesn't play, it's going to be tough kind of deciding what you're going to get from any of the back end of the depth chart with wide receivers, too. You know, I mean, if we're looking at five receivers that you'd put on the roster right now, McLaurin, Diggs, Antonio Williams, Luke McCaffrey, Jalen Lane, because of special teams alone, like, that's five. So then the question is it Treylon Burks, Van Jefferson, De'Ami Brown, and Jaden Bradley that compete for that those last two spots? Is Jaden Bradley a practice squad guy? But if you don't have much of Jaden Daniels or at all throwing the football, are you going to get to a point where it's like Sam Hartman and Ethan Calligmanis throwing them the ball, and you're like, are you really going to get a judgment of what it is? Like, that's what's tough for wide receivers. You're dependent on someone else getting you the football to show what you can do. Now, granted, once it's in your hands, you got to make the plays, but if you're not getting the opportunities, you're not getting the targets. It's why wide receivers are just so angry when they don't get the football. Some more than others, but right, it's like, hey, I'd like to do my job, and I can't. Right? Everybody hates that. Most people. I know I do. If you're waiting on someone else, you got to get something done. You're playing the waiting game on stuff. Oh, it's the worst. I can't stand it. So I can imagine how a wide receiver feels, like Stephon Diggs has done plenty in his career. Throw me the damn ball. But that's how you produce. That's how wide receivers do their job. You got to have the football in their hands. So if you're not getting the ball, that definitely changes things. But yeah, so much of this is going on in practice here too. I do think this is probably a seven wide receiver group. Maybe they go six if there's really a position battle somewhere else. They've just got to keep an extra guy. But like, if you sign Van Jefferson and De'Ami Brown, maybe Treylon Burks just doesn't make the roster because at this point you just like he's up and down and in and out, and it's just he is what he is at this point. Big receiver, I get it. Great catch last year. That was kind of it. So that's really where the debate comes in is, you know, does he provide something different where it's enough? You also have Chigakonkwo who's going to give you essentially like a de facto big receiver, right? He's a tight end, but you can line him up at receiver, great in the red zone, get the ball in his hands, let him run over guys. Like, there's a lot there which may make Treylon Burks expendable anyway. So they might not even have to have that debate. And it's Van Jefferson and De'Ami Brown, the last two spots. You keep seven, boom, you're done. So there you go. I just filled out the roster for wide receiver for this team. Nick Ashew on the Team 980. I'm just glad this Commanders team is not dealing with a quarterback controversy. If the biggest quarterback controversy we have is whether or not Jaden Daniels should play a series or two in the preseason, I'll take it. Nick Ashew, Team 980. A lot of teams going through that right now, and it's nice to be on the outside of that world looking in, isn't it? Fernando Mendoza went 8 of 15 for 86 yards and a pick six in the Raiders preseason game. It was like they were named Kirk Cousins kind of the starter and then have made it like, well, we're not really sure. I think Cousins is probably going to win that job officially. And listen, that's smart if you're the Raiders. You don't have to start a rookie quarterback even if they're the number one overall pick right away. Like, it's okay. I know we like to squeeze every bit of juice of these rookie contracts for quarterbacks out that we can, but if they're not ready, they're not ready. And I'd rather my quarterback wait a year and be more prepared and actually make it to a second contract, then the other way around, where it's Anthony Richardson who wasn't ready, was thrown to the Wolves, clearly not ready, and is now the third-string quarterback with the Colts, and nobody wants to trade for him. He's a young quarterback that nobody wants to trade for. I mean, he's going to be one of the all-time busts, And it's unfortunate, but he was not put in a position to succeed. I'm not even saying that he could have been a starter long-term in the NFL. He was overdrafted to begin with. Shouldn't have been a first-round pick. But throw these guys out too soon. They're just not ready. The speed of the game for every position continues to get harder and harder as you go from training camp to the preseason to the regular season. Like, it's just, it's tough. And honestly, if I'm the Raiders, I would start Kirk Cousins and I would wait. I would not rush Fernando Mendoza out at all. Let him work with Tom Brady. Seriously, utilize Tom Brady. He's literally talked about how bored he is. He owns part of the team and he's bored. Bring him into practice. Let him work with Fernando Mendoza after practice, before practice. Just let Fernando Mendoza go through the personal Tom Brady quarterback class. This is great. You could not be in a better position to learn as a young quarterback than Fernando Mendoza with the Raiders having Tom Brady around. He's not going to be there all the time, but enough. Take advantage of that. He is like a robot, though, when he talks. Like, it is, I swear, it's like, somebody described this one time to me as Fernando Mendoza sounds like ChatGPT wrote his answers, and I can't unhear it now. I just can't. Every time he talks. But I think it's smart if you're the Raiders. There's no reason to force Fernando Mendoza out there right away. It just isn't. And I mean, look, you got other teams going through similar situations, too. It's. I actually thought Tua might win the job in Atlanta, and the Commanders see them late this season. I have no idea what Atlanta's going to look like, but I think we're starting to figure out that Tua's not going to win that starting job. I mean, he's getting beat up in camp. He didn't look good in their first preseason game. I know it was a small sample size. I kind of thought this fresh start might work for him, like I did Kyler Murray, which at least right now Kyler Murray is the starter in Minnesota. But Tua we may just have seen the best of Tua. Like, there were moments, right? But that's always the tough position that so many of these teams are in the NFL, where you either overdraft or maybe you overpay for a quarterback that's like, maybe, yeah, it's good enough. We got to go with it. Like, where are the Panthers going to be right now? They're starting Bryce Young in his preseason game tonight. But they got to start talking about contract with him. Now, it's not going to be a massive contract, but what does that look like? Because obviously, any of these quarterbacks are going to want as much money as they can, as many years as they can, and the team's going to want to go lower if there's any level of a debate. Some quarterbacks, there's no debate. Josh Allen, no debate. Patrick Mahomes, no debate. But there's some quarterbacks where you have to think about that. And it is a quarterback-driven league, which is why I have no problems with the Commanders protecting Jaden Daniels in the preseason. You want your quarterback avoiding hits. It's just a different position. It's just treated differently than everybody else. That's how the league is set up, and it's how the league is going to continue to be set up. It's why they get paid so much, and it's why there are quarterbacks that get contracts where teams still have a lot of reservations. But they know that it's this or the alternative, right? I mean, really, if Jaden Daniels has a year this year that's even the same as his rookie year, doesn't even have to be better, just the same, oh, get ready, because that's going to be a big contract he's going to get. That's all you have to have. Because it's just so hard to, one, find a franchise quarterback, to, two, get to a point where you actually have that consistency, and then, three, build an offense around them and keep this thing going long term. Like, there's just so much that you have to work with that when that stuff clicks, you run. You run to the table and you get it done. And I mean, Tua got paid in Miami, but then they ended up just eating all the money and said, this is run its course. Now, granted, concussions are a big part of it. Injuries are a big part of it, too. And, you know, concussions are different from anything else. But sometimes a fresh start works for quarterbacks, and sometimes it doesn't make the difference at all. The Commanders see both. They see Minnesota. They see Atlanta. We have no idea what those quarterbacks are going to look like by the time they actually play them, right? And that's the thing, too. Like, we spend all this time, and we all do it, right? The win-loss. You're going to win this game, lose this game. Here's how many wins, right? Especially if you're a bettor and you're betting the over on the Commanders' win total or the under, whatever the case is. Like, dude, we have no idea what Atlanta's going to look like late in the season. We have no idea what Minnesota's going to... And defensively, we probably do, right? Brian Flores is going to make that defense... I mean, they're going to be good. It's how they've been. But do we really know what Atlanta's going to look like on December 20th? Do we know what Minnesota's going to be quarterback-wise or anything else late in the season like that? We just don't. I do think Kyler Murray's in the right place. I think he can succeed there. But that's why it's just so tough. These are two teams that have two quarterbacks that were essentially fighting for a starting job. One was figured out a lot sooner in Minnesota, and you kind of knew that. Michael Penix Jr., coming off of another knee injury, might end up winning the job in Atlanta, which would be a relief for them because, you know, they drafted him while they had Kirk Cousins on the roster and said, yeah, but we also have our future guy. Your future guy hasn't been good enough. That's why you brought Tua in. Now, Tua could have been brought in as a backup with that in their mind, but starting to look more and more like that's actually the case. But it is a breath of fresh air to be in a position where you can just say, we at least know who the starting quarterback is for this team. And that's a great position to be in the NFL. You can worry about it all the time in terms of what preseason looks like or who gets what in the protection. The regular season's different. But at least to go into a season doing that and not talking about John Beck and Rex Grossman and Danny Werfel, Shane Matthews at quarterback, Mark Sanchez for a game, remember that? I know it wasn't preseason, but you get the idea. So it's when you are a team that does not have that position figured out, you stretch. And you sometimes make decisions, whether it's overpays or overdrafting or whatever the case is, because you got to get that position right. And that's why they're protected. And that's why Jaden Daniels shouldn't play in the preseason. They got too many other injuries they've dealt with. The offensive line's not 100%. Yeah, I get it. It's not going to be in the regular season necessarily either, at least at left tackle. But you also don't have your center out there. And the offense is not going to benefit. You're not going to benefit from one drive where it's a little bit of the playbook. A tiny little bit. And they'll probably run the football half the time anyway, like they did last year. We thought, ooh, they're going to run the ball. Oh, never mind. Guess that's not the case. Nick Ashew, Team 980. Sometimes you just got to hug it out, don't you? Nick Ashew, Team 980. A.J. Brown, Jalen Hurts hugging it out at Patriots-Eagles joint practice. They'll play tomorrow night in the preseason. Yeah, it's good. It's good to know now that after A.J. Brown leaked all that stuff about Jalen Hurts, they're cool now, right? Sometimes you just need a fresh start, don't you? Let me tell you something. A.J. Brown could actually have a monster season in New England, especially because you got Romeo Doubs opposite you. I'll credit the Patriots. You can love them or hate them, and you probably hate them, right? But they continue to, other than those lean years at the end post-Tom Brady, they know how to build a team, and they continue to do it. This team was horrendous before Mike Vrabel took over, a fair aside. And then they needed to help the defense. And they went out and they were aggressive and they added the defense. And that defense, obviously with Drake May in the regular season, was a little different. But in the playoffs, that defense is what got them to a Super Bowl. And then they realized, ooh, the offensive line is bad. We have nobody that Drake May can throw the football to. And that was a problem in the playoffs. So what did they do? Well, they went out and addressed the offense this offseason. And I'm not saying that A.J. Brown is the A.J. Brown in his peak, one of the best receivers in the NFL, like top two or three. But what I am saying is that he's right at that spot where there might be still some left in his prime, and there's a real opportunity there, I think, for him to succeed with New England. And that's the thing with the Eagles, right? Like, the Eagles are a massive question mark week one, two on offense, just as much as the Commanders are. I mean, new offensive coordinator, new weapons at wide receiver. What does the offense look like for the Eagles? Now, you have an idea of what they're going to be with Jalen Hurts. They might run the ball more with Jalen Hurts, which is something that they should have done in the past. They're going to try to get him to throw the ball over the middle more. Of course, he's in the greatest shape of his life, because everybody, breaking news, is in the greatest shape of their life heading into training camp. That's just how it works. But just as much as it's going to be a mystery week one with what David Blau's offense is going to be for the Commanders, it's Sean Mannion's offense in Philadelphia that's going to be similar. Where it's, okay, what does this look like? And then, of course, there's Saquon Barkley, where 2 years ago had a historic season and was really the reason that they got to the Super Bowl. It was not Jalen Hurts. Now, I know Jalen Hurts won the MVP, but really that defense, I mean, they sacked Mahomes six times. It was the defense. It was less Saquon Barkley in the Super Bowl, but it was Saquon Barkley. Really, just even as, think about it like this. When you have somebody that ran for 2,000 yards in the regular season, that had the season that Saquon Barkley had, you're always going to be paying attention to what they're doing out of the backfield. Even if they're going to throw the ball, again, you have an established run game, you open up the ability to throw the football more. And it worked for them. Is it Saquon Barkley of last year, though, or is it Saquon Barkley of 2 years ago for the Eagles? That's the question. One thing we do know is that Saquon Barkley hates joint practices. Can't stand it whatsoever. And I think some guys are not a fan of these. Some guys are okay with it at this point. I guess it was good for A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts. They got to, you know, hug it out and, I guess, become friends again. But here was Saquon about joint practices in the NFL.
I hate joint practices, to be honest. I think one day's good, but, you know, we play in a, you know, ego-filled sport with a lot of men, and it can, I'm all about just putting the work in, and it's good to go against someone new. I think we're at that part of camp where we needed to go against a new face. Honestly, I'm not really a fan of joint practice. More times than not, nothing good comes out of it. Like, you get the when you have the work, it's good, but then you get the pushing, the shoving, and someone says this about you, and I'm like, oh no, but I'm not that. You're this, and just like, it's immature when we get to that level. I gotta do a better job too, because I'm a little troublemaker sometimes. But I was good this week.
I mean, when you see guys 2 days in a row in a football game, yeah, think about it. Like, this is what happens in like the NBA playoffs. Teams start to hate each other as the season or as the series goes on. And it made for just great. I mean, we had a record-breaking ratings for the NBA playoffs this year because they were heated. It felt like there were more rivalries there. Teams just didn't like each other. You wanted to be competitive there. You're seeing these guys over and over and over again. Someone's running their mouth. They keep doing it. Like, it becomes a thing. So I get it. Exactly what Saquon Barkley's saying, because you have a couple of days in the row. Because even think about it then. If you see a team you don't like, you see them one game. Two games if it's a division matchup, right? During an entire season. But back-to-back days? That's where the petty fights break out. That's where the pushing and shoving, because it's already happens enough with just your team, right? The offense sees the defense, and it's the same guy every day, and you're sick and tired of it. And it's, you might even be boys, but like, if you're sitting there going helmet to helmet, play after play after play, for day after day after day, eventually you're gonna get sick of them. Friends are gonna want to slap each other in the face, at least. So I get what he's saying. I don't care. So I hope the Eagles are completely dysfunctional this year. I don't think they're going to be, but I mean, that is something that you have to keep in mind, is the two teams seeing each other too often and then having a preseason game on top of that. It does add up to that a little bit. But the joint practices have become more and more popular. A lot of teams are fans of those more than they are preseason games. Some of it's because, you know, you can kind of hide some of the stuff you're doing, and it's a team that you don't play during the regular season, so you can really try some things out. In a preseason game where there's actually cameras and people can see everything, it's a different story. So there's something to be said for that. But I get it. I get why Saquon Barkley probably doesn't like it. But most guys don't like camp anyway. They get sick of it. It's hot. You're tired. You're beat up. At least you don't have 2-a-days anymore. 2-a-days were a thing not that long ago. It is crazy. It is crazy how much camps have they've limited so much of this now. I don't know if we're ever going to really, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend because I'm not a doctor, but I would be curious how far we can go to like really determine whether or not more physical training camps and more hitting actually makes players healthier during the regular season. Because it's not going to help if you step wrong and tear an ACL. We have plenty of ACL injuries, but I can understand if you have other injuries that, you know, soft tissue injuries or things that kind of become lingering because you're not used to taking those hits early in camp, and then the regular season hits and it becomes a thing. But if a dude steps wrong and has a non-contact injury and tears up his knee, I mean, that has nothing to do with training camp. I mean, yes, there is a physicalness that is there, and there's training that you can help with your ligaments and your joints, and sure, but like, let's be honest with ourselves. You step wrong on turf, you step wrong on turf. No amount of practice or hitting is going to make a difference there. It's just not. But I mean, we can't take away more. I just don't think there's ever going to be a right answer. So robot football. Once we have robot football where all the billionaires who are bored and tired of buying pro sports franchises, which now we've watched the Timberwolves and the Lakers both get flipped by billionaires. It's not real estate for them. They just decide, hey, you know what? I'm going to buy a team and then I'm going to flip it in a year for a couple extra cool billion. I mean, once we have robot football and they perfect this, I see all these videos of these robots. They're having them run, you know, 100-yard dash and then they run into a wall. That video's making its rounds. That's really funny. But at some point, they're going to be so good that we should actually have real robot football. Anthony, would you watch robot football if they could really hit each other and pop their heads off like Rock'em Sock'em Robots? Come on. Don't tell me you're not tempted in this idea. You're thinking about it? That is a must watch.
I don't think I could.
Oh, no. Come on.
I don't think I could.
Oh, I would watch it endlessly. Because you could make it kind of ridiculous. Like, you could hit robots so hard that their head pops off. Rooting for that.
Have you seen the movie Real Steel?
Yes.
That's what it is giving me, like, glimpses of. That's all I can think of right now.
But that was fighting, and they already well, they don't have robots like that, but they have the robot fighting leagues that are already out there. But it's just like they have saws and stuff, and you know they cut up their robots and whatever. Yeah. Robot wars or bot wars, whatever it's called, something like that. People build their robots and they fight in an octagon or something. Yep. But it's not like walking around. I would watch it, and I would watch it religiously. Oh, it would be amazing. I mean, I know it would never be like humans doing the real stuff, but you could just make it so violent, and you know that it's okay. It's just robots. Although then there would be fights over whether or not they're conscious, and then that would be a whole thing. So I don't know. Maybe that actually wouldn't work in the end. People would find a way to politicize it. I know that. That would definitely be the case. Politics would get involved, and Congress would find some reason. Anyway, not going to go out on that tirade, but I'm just saying, give me robot football. I would watch it in a second. At some point, Jeff Bezos is going to be like, fine, if I can't buy an NFL team, I'm making my own league. And he could. Was it you that I was talking to about how Elon Musk could literally buy half of the, you know, sports teams that are out there with his trillions? Yeah, that was the other day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and, you know, let's throw in a few other, you know, Sam Altman could be in there. Throw in all these billionaires, all these dudes that are in tech. Just start a league. I'd watch some robot football. That'd be great. And then, you know, you could have like, oh, you could have fans get involved. Where, like, you can control a robot for one play. Like, you have the fan robot. Oh, yeah. I'm telling you. I got ideas, Anthony. I'm going to get you to buy in on this. I'm going to get you to buy in on this robot football.
And look, it's only going to take a little bit more convincing. That's all.
All right. We'll work on this. I got another hour to convince you about robot football and get in on this. I think we can make this work. Nick Ashew, Team 980.